Nielsen ranked number one. Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600.
And we are continuing our back-to-school coverage here on WICC 600, connecting now with Superintendent Michael Testani of Bridgeport. And Superintendent Testani, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's been a hectic couple of months, to say the least, for the superintendents across the state. First of all, let's backtrack a little bit before we get into what our schools look like right now. What was that process like for you to get everything you wanted across to the state and to the governor as to what you wanted in the plans for Bridgeport schools?
That was a pretty seamless process. I think the state Department of Ed, the commissioner, the governor on down, they've been really cooperative, especially for us here in Bridgeport, understanding our needs and trying to meet those needs. So I appreciate all the support. Commissioner Cardone has been an amazing leader for us all, and the governor has really pushed to support his plan, not just a plan, but he's also put resources behind it. So It's been a pretty good experience for us here.
What are teachers feeling this morning? And I ask that because we've had other teachers from different communities, and they've come on and they have said point blank that there are things they don't know. There are things that are still up in the air, and there's a lot of anxiety and worry going back to school. How are Bridgeport teachers feeling?
I would say it's some of the same. There are a lot of unknowns just based on the fact that, we haven't reopened yet. Teachers reported back yesterday here in Bridgeport, so this is day two for teachers. Concerns have been raised, just like in other towns. I think, one of the difficult parts for everyone is that it's not as black and white as a normal school year is. It's been from the top, from the governor on down. This is a fluid situation. Decisions will be made based on the most recent information and data that we have. So right now, everything looks good for the green light to open up schools. Some folks don't agree with that, and I respect that opinion. But I think we're all set to go. And if things do change and we have to make decisions based on different information and different data as it comes up, then we're prepared to do that.
There are a lot of teachers, Superintendent, that have said on our show and that I've talked to personally who have said, we kind of wasted time this summer not putting into place virtual learning more. We understand the need for in-person classes and the need to have that personal connection. But, as far as Bridgeport is concerned, do you feel that you are prepared for a surge and the fact that your teachers and your students will probably end up being virtual probably by October if things do get out of hand?
Well, I think we're as prepared as we're going to be today. Some of the things the Bridgeport Public Schools are any other urban district cannot prepare for, and that's some of the things that, some of the socioeconomic barriers that exist. I mean, we don't actually have, and I don't think we're going to know 100% who has reliable internet at home. We can guess, and we go by the information that is given to us, and we can try to prepare to help support that. Laptops and devices we've purchased, we've been given from the Connecticut Partnership a number of devices. The city, the mayor, and the city council is extremely supportive in helping us get devices. But we were so far behind with resources that to catch up in a couple of months is a difficult task. I think with the help of the state, we have some more devices coming, but that will not be until sometime in October. And that's at no fault of anyone except the supply chain across the country is low. Everyone is looking for devices for their districts, for their homes. So, I don't believe that. I think we are prepared if the time comes to the best we can be. But you also have to remember, too, teachers will make that statement, and I respect and I love our teachers. They are extremely dedicated to our students and families. But during the summer months, if you ask folks to come in to prepare, to lesson plan, to curriculum write, they want to be paid. So So this idea that we haven't prepared all summer for virtual learning, we've prepared for a hybrid, we've prepared for virtual, and we've prepared for in-person. So I think we're good to go.
So at this point, Superintendent, if we did go virtual, though, there are, you're saying, we still have a number of people who do not have the laptops or technology that they need, again, because of a supply chain issue. So do you worry about gaps, you know, students falling behind and teachers being blamed for that?
Well, I don't think the teachers are being blamed for it. I think other folks are being blamed for the lack of resources. I mean, Bridgeport's been underfunded for almost a decade, so I think that's part of the issue that we're dealing with. But also, a device in the hands of a kindergarten, first or second grader, to engage with someone remotely to learn critical reading, writing, math skills is I think, an unreasonable ask for a 7, a 6, and a 5-year-old. I just don't see that as a reasonable ask. I think the in-person interaction with a teacher is critical, especially at those primary grade levels.
So what does school look like? When are students going back? Are we looking at a hybrid model for elementary through high school? What can you tell us?
So right now we are running a hybrid model at our high schools when we open up on September 8th. For our elementary middle schools, because of the response from parents right now, that could change, obviously. We have about 55% of the parents saying they're going to send their child to school. So there's not a need for a hybrid. We are watching class sizes extremely close. And if parents decide to change and send their child in person rather than remote and the class sizes start to grow, we would probably have to consider, maybe not at every school, but possibly at certain schools first and then maybe district-wide, a hybrid model there as well.
So forgive me, but okay, so 55% of parents feel comfortable with their kids going back to school. So for that 45%, are you looking at parents who don't feel comfortable sending their kids in? Like, are they homeschooling their kids?
We've had some requests for homeschooling that I've seen come across my desk. The rest have opted for remote learning. That is an option that is on the table from the state Department of Ed. So we will be live streaming classes back to students via our online platform, Microsoft Teams, and students will participate in class virtually.
Okay. When you have the virtual and the in-person classes, I know Bridgeport has needed teachers in the past to be able to step up and to fill some of those positions. Do you feel you have enough, like an adequate number of teachers to be able to balance both the virtual and in-person classes?
Well, because the way we've got it set up, a teacher will be teaching their class. Those that are in person will be in front of them, and the remaining students that are virtual will be participating from home. So it'll happen simultaneously. So the need for extra teachers is not the issue right now.
Okay.
We just don't have the facilities to create more classrooms and have more teachers in the building, even if we wanted to. I mean, we have a finite number of rooms in our buildings. We are a heavily populated district. Our class sizes are large to begin with. So unless we can have buildings pop up or plate space available, having added teachers, we just have nowhere to put them.
Mm-hmm. And Superintendent, before I let you go, I know a lot of other school districts have, because it's a very challenging process, to put it simply. Do students know at this point what cohorts they're in, or is that still being worked out?
Well, the students that are in the hybrid model at the high school do know the cohort they're in based on the letter of the alphabet. We put that out about a month ago when we decided to go hybrid for our high school. So we wanted to get that information out quickly. So it was just clean to just decide to go by a letter of the alphabet.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great. I was just saying before that I've run into some high school students in other towns and cities that still have no idea when they're even going to school. Like, they know it's back to school September 8th, but they don't know what cohort they're in. And I thought, oh man, that's it's challenging.
We wanted to make sure we got it out quickly. this way we can reinforce it. We're trying to get as much information out to our families as it's known. Again, some things are fluid. You don't want to have to put out information several times and people get confused. So I think that could be some of the reasoning behind other districts trying to time the information release at what they feel is right, so they don't have to put it out two or three times. But we got it out there. We're sticking by our model. And like I said, unless we have to pivot on our K-8 level to a hybrid, we're pretty comfortable where we're at today.
All right. Well, Superintendent Michael Testani of Bridgeport this morning, thank you so much for chatting about the back to school, the whole process, what's going on in Bridgeport, and looking forward to talking to you again really soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's a big day for a lot of teachers heading back to their classrooms for the first time in about 5 months before students come back to in-person learning. And joining me now on the phone is Kim Helthaler. She is actually a teacher in Norwalk at Tracy Magnet School. Kim, thanks for being here this morning. How you feeling?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so much, Melissa.
So what is it like to be driving in? I can hear that you're in the car right now headed back to school. How are you feeling this morning?
Unanswered questions and a lot of things we don't know right now. So I'm feeling a little anxious at this moment.
What grade do you teach?
So I do special ed. I usually work with students in kindergarten, first and second, and third grade. But right now this year, I believe I'm only going to be working with first and second graders in their classrooms.
Okay, so this is like the cohorting. You're going to go into their classrooms versus kids going in the hallways, basically.
Yeah, so on a typical year, I do resource. So the kids will come into my classroom, and I'll do small group instruction, maybe like me with two kids or me with four kids, just to really work on their IEP goals and objectives since they're special education. But with all the guidelines, the city has opted to do full inclusion, so all special education students receiving resource services will be in the classroom. So I've got assigned to 5 classrooms. I'll be on a cart, and I'll kind of just spend like an hour and a half in each classroom co-teaching.
So that's very different than what you're used to. I mean, do you feel like going into this, are you nervous? You know, so Norwalk was one of the first standout cities in the state that when they brought back schooling in person for summer school, they had that outbreak at the, not the outbreak, but they had the positive test at the high school and they shut things down like a couple days later. Do you worry about going back to virtual learning before you know it?
I don't know. At this point, I almost would prefer virtual learning. I just don't feel like we're in the clear. And having two kids at home, I mean, my priority is their health. So, you know, I'm going to be exposed to a lot of children, and they'll be exposed to children, and it makes it a scary place. I mean, I just don't know if we're at the place to have the proper PE gear given to us to feel completely comfortable. I mean, I guess that's what we'll spend the next week and a half learning about. What the district's going to offer us. Right now, we just don't know. And I know that's been a big thing with the union, trying to fight for the right protective gear.
Well, and actually, you bring up a great point, which is that a lot of teachers also have children or grandchildren in some situations. And, you know, what is that like to balance that? Because as a parent, you're probably nervous just to send your kids back to school in some capacity. But then as a teacher, you yourself are nervous to be back in school. So it's kind of like, other than your husband, everyone in your household is in this very uncomfortable place, I would think.
Yeah, it's very stressful. And then the fact is that, like, we're in different districts. So, like, Norwalk is a different plan than the town I live in, which is Deerfield, and they're doing half-day cohorts. So just the amount of planning and stressing to try to figure out what we're going to do with after-school care, because my kids have school in the morning. Is it safe enough? My mother is 65, and so she's nervous about watching my kids who've been exposed to other children and then me coming in. And so the plan is for me to come home from work and take a quick shower and just not expose my kids to anything I've been exposed to. There's a lot of steps. And we still don't even have all the answers about after-school care for my children right now. So that's weighing on me as well.
Well, So you're the third teacher I've had on this week, Kim, and I just find myself at a loss for words because it's just so unsettling. It's literally like getting onto a plane and you find out that it's flying, but there's no pilot. That's how I just feel like I keep feeling. I feel awful for the teachers and the parents who just, you know, where was I? I was somewhere yesterday. I was getting a shake. And the girl who runs it, her mom owns the shop, but she was running it and she's in high school. And I said to her, how are you feeling going back to school? And she said, I don't even know when I'm going back because they haven't even told us they didn't say what days I go into school. Yeah. I know it's hybrid, but I don't even know what days. And I think to myself, this poor 15-year-old doesn't even know when she's going back to school, doesn't know which friends are going to be in her group. Like, I just think it's so broken. I feel awful for you guys.
And I know that a lot of teachers did not enjoy doing distance learning. I had a different perspective from it. I started distance learning like day one, live streaming with my students. And I don't know, I felt like I was able to give them some really good individualized instruction. I also became closer to the families because the parents were helping while I was teaching. And so I'm really not against going virtual just because I felt like I did make progress with the students I had.
Well, Kim, certainly I would love to know, and keep tabs with you as well as our other teachers that we've had on the show, how things are going. If you'd like to come back on the air, I would love to have you come back and give us an update, especially after your training week and a half. Let me know how how things are going in Norwalk.
Okay, absolutely.
Good luck today, Kim. Thinking of you and praying for all the teachers and hope everything goes okay.
All right. Thanks, Melissa.
Senator Blumenthal, glad to reconnect with you. How are you?
Good to be back. Thank you. And welcome home, too.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to talk about something that did happen while I was away right before coming back to work. And that was, of course, on everybody's mind, the Jacob Blake shooting in Wisconsin. We know that we are slowly getting more details about this, the case this morning, the officer involved shooting and everything. But I know you were on the line, I think near the tail end of my news, and you may have heard the Milwaukee Bucks players calling for lawmakers in Wisconsin to put police reform in place. So first of all, my question to you is, do you know of other states that acted the way Connecticut did weeks ago, which was put legislation in place immediately, even if it didn't go into effect right away, but just to get the ball rolling for changes? Do we know if more states did what Connecticut has done already to make these changes?
If there were any states that adopted significant reforms, I'm unaware of them. There may have been some steps around the nation. Of course, the House of Representatives in Congress adopted a major police reform measure that, for example, banned chokeholds and made reforms in training, provided more assistance and support for reforms at the local level. The Senate, unfortunately, has failed to act and move forward. I am a leading co-sponsor of a measure to provide for more training and also a ban on chokeholds, ban on no-knock warrants, other kinds of reforms at the local level. But by and large, reforms have not moved forward.
I'm shocked about that. I mean, to me, I think it is kind of eerily disturbing that almost 3 months to the day, George Floyd had his life taken at the hands of a white officer. And then literally almost 3 months exactly later, we see clearly on video, even though you don't know exactly what happened beforehand, you don't know exactly what the dialogue is, you see a white officer fire off 7 shots at a black man. And I think to myself, what is being done nationwide? Like at this point, I feel very similar to the way COVID was kind of handled. I'm surprised that we sort of let states just sort of decide. And I understand it's up to the governors to do that. But at some point, how many times do we watch this happen before something is put into place that, okay, everyone's got to follow this. All police should be trained at a certain level. All police should be breaking racial biases. We should be tracking, if we have bad apples in a department. Like at what point do we just make something unified, if you will? I know that that's probably impossible to answer, but I'm just wondering if that's been sort of discussed.
I share your frustration because I am a leading advocate of reform at the national level. I agree that the standards have to be somewhat uniform around the country. At least there should be minimum kinds of training requirements and other kinds of review. For example, one of the proposals that I support is for independent civilian review of allegations of police brutality or cruelty. The justice reform movement, as you will recall well, went to our streets. There were demonstrations and protests and marches all over the country. I went to about 20 in Connecticut, and they were peaceful, powerful, passionate, led by young people who have led many of our social reform movements, like the civil rights movement back in the 60s. And yet so far, nothing has come of all of those protests and demonstrations at the national level. I am still hoping that in the remainder of this session or the next session of Congress, whether it's with a new administration, even under a reelected Trump administration, that there will be some movement forward. There has to be some progress. And it's not about being against the police. It's not about defunding the police. I'm in favor of law enforcement. I was a prosecutor, U.S. attorney in Connecticut for 4.5 years, the chief federal prosecutor. Then I was attorney general for 20 years. I strongly support effective and honest law enforcement. And I believe that police themselves are really repulsed by some of what they are seeing those instances around the country. So I think we will and we should have reform.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know even just a couple of days ago, you were in Bridgeport, and a good chunk of federal money is now going to support new equipment and new stuff for our Bridgeport police and fire rescue crews. So we know that defunding is not necessarily the answer. That's not really what we're looking for, because we do need police to protect us. We do. But we need systematic changes. I think that's the big thing. And it sounds like that's a continued effort in Washington. And hopefully it continues to somehow catch on in other states like it did in Connecticut, because kudos to Governor Lamont. It may not have been perfect legislation, but it was something. And, you know, when you watch something like what happened with, this 29-year-old man with his three kids in the car, you do realize that, you know, listen, at least Connecticut made changes and knew that this was important and that we needed to get rid of social bias. We do. So I appreciate your efforts in Washington, and we'll certainly keep close tabs on it. Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.